Michael Shanks is a professor of archaeology at Stanford, where he runs something called a metamedia lab. I think many of us have an image of archaeologists as being perpetually covered in dust, and Professor Shanks has certainly done his share of old-fashioned digging. But his interests now have a lot less to do with dirt, and a lot more to do with design. The lab he runs looks at the history of design, and tries to apply what we learned from ancient history to more modern kinds of design. A few years ago, his group was hired by Daimler Chrysler, the car company, to help them figure out how people interact with the car interior and how Chrysler should approach designing new cars for the future. Why would a car company hire an academic archaeologist to help them with design concepts? In our first piece, Professor Shanks tells us why archaeology can be so useful in revealing just how crucial people's interactions with objects can be in making them who they are. For Shanks, objects are about so much more than work and play, style and function. They're about making us human.
Hi, I'm Michael Shanks, and I'm an archaeologist at Stanford. Archaeologists, well, not every archaeologist, but certainly my angle on archaeology is that, among other things, we are interested in the history of design. And the connection with Daimler Chrysler centered on a problem they face, which is how to reconcile the design cycle of a vehicle, a car, with the design cycles of the stuff that goes in cars, such as consumer electronics. That was their problem as to how to put it together. But what really they were interested in doing was, yes, looking at the engineering problem of how to create a platform for consumer electronics that would work and attract people, but also they wanted to rethink the experience of mobile media in the car interior. And they thought, well, I convinced them that anthropological archaeologists who are interested in the history of design could help them think outside the box. The argument we made was actually quite simple. We argued that their understanding of people's experience of the vehicle was fatally flawed. They considered that who you are determines what you want in the way of a vehicle, in the way of an experience in the car vehicle. So demographics were their primary focus. They would figure out, you know, what the demographic of a typical Chrysler Sebring buyer was, user was, and on the basis of that, they would figure out what they should do with the vehicle, how to keep its design appealing to that demographic category. We turned it around and said, actually, that's not the way the world works. It's not who you are that makes you do certain things. It's doing things, buying things, using things that makes you who you are. Cutting a long story short, I think we have focused, not just as archaeologists, but as people interested in making and design, we focused a little bit too much on the artifact itself. That is, the form, the shape, indeed, yes, the function, supposed or actual, of an artifact. I'm now much more interested in the processes of making and using things. Because I think the processes of making and using things, of course, raises issues of function. But there's so much more to it, because it's about the integration, the part that tools play, that artifacts play, in people's lives, which of course are not simply about performing function. They're not ever simply about going out, getting food, eating it, and surviving. For as long as we've been human, indeed many, many species are, yes, of course, concerned about survival, but there's so much more to life. One, I think, thing we can instantly point out is that some of the earliest human artifacts were not functional. We've got a whole series of perforated shells, which were used almost certainly strung on beads, they were strung as beads to make ornamental artifacts. So the earliest things that mattered to people, in a sense, were for decorative purposes. That is, they're about who you are. They're expressing your a particular way you are in the world and your relationship to stuff around you, such that you want to put it on your body, you want to hang it from your body and show it off to other people. And I think there's a message there about a lot of our attitude towards things, which is that it's always been more than function. Another example that I like to think of here is early metals. You might think it's perfectly appropriate, a common view, to think that early metallurgy is about function. That is, that metals offer a better, more efficient degree of certain kinds of functionality over stone tools. But it's clear from the prehistoric archaeological record that the earliest metallurgy, copper using, it was very little to do with function, efficiency, and a greater degree of, what can we say, sharp edges in the world. It wasn't about that. Copper is soft. It's not as good in many ways as stone for achieving certain ends. So what did it offer? Well, it's kind of straightforward, really. It's shiny and a lovely red color. It looked good. The role of customization has become absolutely a big deal in our lives today. In spite of that generic nature of the artifact, I mean, every iPhone is essentially the same as every other iPhone. And yet, in spite of that, they are yours. The individual iPhone is yours because you can customize it. And it gives you an individual window on the world, or an individualized window on the world. I think that's one of the great attractions of gadgetry today. But it is by no means new. I wonder if you could call this gadgetry. Here's a bit of a thought I'm having about going back to the Bronze Age. I was mentioning metallurgy before. One of the things that happens across Europe, across the Bronze Age of Europe, you see the emergence, the development of a relatively standardized set of equipment that goes with being a warrior aristocrat. The warrior lord of the Bronze Age of Northern Europe had a standardized set of equipment, and it's not unfamiliar to us now for all sorts of reasons, including fantasy games today. But it's the warrior weaponry of helmet and body armor, the great sword, spear, and such. Included in that material, though, is also a series of grooming instruments. They had brushes, combs, pins to hold cloaks on, and articles for personal grooming. Ear scoops, as well as combs, for example. This standardized kit is found right over Europe, north, south, east, west. Yet, every particular manifestation of this standardized equipment is different. So there's always a way of making your sword slightly different, or your combination of goods yours rather than someone else's. So the space within this general repertoire of goods, space for you to be unique. And that is something I think we see a great deal of today. It's how do you be an individual in a group? How can you be a distinctive person within a broader social group? And often it's done with particular ways of dealing with artifacts and goods. The distinction between work and play, work and leisure, is a relatively recent one. It's one certainly that's at the heart of contemporary experience, because, you know, there's a radical separation made between the two. That has not been the case in most societies. And that, I think, also applies to those concepts of playfulness, of experiment, of making trials in the world, and that's how I would categorize the likes of toys and playfulness. It's this attitude towards the world. I think we're probably just too trapped by that old modernist notion that form should follow function. But that was a slogan by, you know, various design schools to promote their own way of making things. And it isn't the truth. I think often, frankly, thinking of function versus style, versus play, versus emotion or whatever, or meaning, I think this just obscures things. It's not that they're not useful concepts, by no means, but to think primarily in that way just leads you up the wrong path when you could be thinking much more about the richness of artifacts and the manifold nature of their connections with people, rather than this rather more unidimensional way of understanding goods and design.
You can find out more about Michael Shanks and his work at Stanford in the Metamedia Lab at metamedia.stanford.edu.